Welcome to Conversations and Connections with HBA Canada, the podcast that gives you access to industry leaders and offers valuable insights for career growth. We will be bringing you monthly episodes that include interviews with influential leaders and HBA members from healthcare and the life sciences, where they will offer career insights and key lessons they've learned. We will also be bringing you discussions highlighting essential career topics like networking, mentorship, finance, and more. Our podcast gives HBA members a chance to learn and grow together in their careers and their personal lives. Be part of the conversation as we aim to achieve our goal of getting more women into leadership roles. So don't delay and join us. Welcome back, HBA members. We have Jen Nash, founder of Beautiful Coaching and Counseling, back on the podcast for part two today. We are putting her in the hot seat to coach us through three common scenarios women leaders deal with every day. With over two decades of experience, Jen's coaching approach unlocks passion, purpose, and potential in individuals and teams, helping leaders thrive in life's complexities. I am so excited. Get ready for this. We're going to launch right into the scenarios. So we're going to put some theory into practice. We're going to do some role playing. No, sales reps, don't get triggered. It's okay. We're actually going to be putting Jen in the hot seat. We're going to talk about three different challenges that are very common in the workplace and how she would recommend or advise and coach us through them. So the first one is we're going to imagine a scenario where we have a newly promoted female leader and she's struggling to assert herself in a very male-dominated environment. So Jen, how would you coach her to navigate this challenge and leverage her unique strengths?
I think this would be a very common scenario that we've worked through numerous times with leaders in some of the women's leadership programs that I've served. And this really does tie in what we were just speaking about. What would I do or how would I hold space? I would be very curious about what assertiveness means to this leader and look at that through the lens of masculine and feminine energies and what assertive means through those contexts, and invite the little bit deeper of a exploration of going within is to say, what would you like to, how would you like to show up and invoke agency into that leader on their own assertiveness? And some somatic practices that I tend to do and integrate into a lot of the work is around embodiment of these two different energies, and also in their own bodies, but also looking to read other leaders and how we move together and co-create. So if I'm here with you, instead of just talking about what I would do, maybe I can invite you, Christina, to tune into yourself and listeners as well. And first bring your head, heart, and gut into alignment, stacking them like stones, one on top of the other, and noticing the length that you're holding your body and the width and the depth, your wholeness, filling up your body with the energy and taking up the space you do in this world, and truly inviting leaders to take up space. And so those that may shrink, we physically take up the space and discern and choose how we posture and hold our bodies. A few exercises I sometimes go into will then be what I call statue or sculpture. There are two different ways. It depends sometimes if we're in collective or individual containers, but statue is inviting the leader to take on similar pose, like in a yoga class, as to what is a very masculine embodied energy that you would shape yourself into, and how do you experience masculine energy? And then the opposite of that is the question of how do you invoke that feminine energy in your body and shape yourself in those ways? And how do you bring those together? What does it look like when those come together? And so through the body helps to integrate some of the thoughts and the heart space into how we first hold ourselves and assert ourselves through our bodies. And that connection for women, I think, is a real rich landscape, our connections to our bodies. And so scenario one, I would say, let's do some of this work. Now, if it was in collective work, sculpture is where we invite other people to use ourselves as a tool, if you will, and they put our bodies into form as to what their expression of masculine and feminine energy is. And we partner with them and co-create and hold that. But it's very interesting then to look around a room, a team where there's different manifestations of these two energies and see how that is represented through that inclusion of body and not just talking about these concepts. And so the outcomes of that type of practice, I would say, invites deep reflection into what comes up through the heart and the head. Then when we focus on the body and assertiveness through the lens of posture and showing up.
Oh,
what comes up for you when I share that?
For me, I think what I wanted to do was just literally look at my bicep flex and like almost give it a kiss, like, yeah, I got this. But and then with sculpture, like I'm getting a dancer's pose if I'm doing a sculpture. So I love it. I think that's an amazing exercise, listeners. Honestly, try it with your friends if you don't want to try it at work, because I think, like you said, then have the conversation.
And notice what sensations come up in our bodies and what emotions come through our hearts when we start looking at the relational dynamics between masculine and feminine energies and how we identify and how we want to have agency in showing up in this world, leading the lives from a place of our own authenticity of self. How do we integrate both of those in ourselves? So I would say, how do we dance through life, right? And be with and dance, very much an adaptation. Dancing in this moment is a presencing technique, and dancer's pose evokes a lot of that being in the moment when we're trying to be assertive and being very present. And so thinking through these things and reflecting through the posturing, helping leaders to fully integrate and then show up, regardless of their gender, being true and authentic to themselves, fully psychologically safe and emotionally safe and physically safe in their bodies, in their hearts, and in their minds.
And it puts for me, and I know I took a course, and when I'm feeling overwhelmed now, I'll throw a song on and dance. And I don't know what it is about dancing. If it's moving your body, it enables me to sometimes I'll cry. Sometimes I'll just start laughing. Like it's just whatever it does gets releases that emotion. And then if I'm really excited and I want to start the day, I'll put on a song. It just aligned with what I had started doing this year of moving and having that be something that helps to ground. It actually helps to ground me at least. So
that's
I
don't so know
what
beautiful.
Your thoughts are on
that. Oh, you opened up a whole other podcast we can do around conscious movement and how that.
It.
And I bring that into a lot of the coaching work I do. Mm-hmm. It's very much through this somatic and embodiment work. A few Strozzi Institute is well known for somatics and leadership and embodiment work. And for me, dance was a vehicle. And I will share a lot of the conscious dance practices that I've gotten involved in over the years. Hold space for just that movement and processing through our kinesthetic centers, our movement. And if we're not moving, we're dead. Let's face it. So let's keep moving. And to me, that's what underpins being agile, growing, moving, and how we dance through this life. A lot of cultures intentionally practice dance for reasons that I think evoke joy, evoke connection, evoke creative expression and processing and so on. But what one example of a woman leader that I had that did just that, Christina, was movement. She needed to do some good hair whipping. This was how she was going to move through frustration. And I found myself as her coach on the other end, whipping my hair along with her. So my own journey with dance was a very rich one. I danced a lot growing up in various different contexts. And as I entered more into my headspace and went down the journey of degrees and formal education and career and that path, dance left me for a while until through my coaching practice, I was brought into somatics and embodiment, which re-engaged me in conscious dance. One school that you mentioned music too, and the neuroscience of music is really cool in leadership development, how we consciously can use music to set. And the integration of music and dance together, when left to improv, being in improvisation dance and not follow the leader, not partnered dance that's structured and memorized and not a competitive space, no substances to alter our conscious states to altered states. Dance becomes this vehicle by where we can achieve altered states of consciousness. When we often say altered states for altered traits with transformational leadership. And so movement in a practice that I'm very near and dear to my heart is called Five Rhythms. Gabrielle Roth, many years ago, started this practice through Eslan in California. And there's various teachers all over the world that do workshops in collective around the five rhythms and how each wave of rhythm starts with a very feminine energy and it's very flow. And the next rhythm is a staccato. It's a masculine energy that invites us to move our bodies in ways. And the integration of those two leads us to chaos, which is where you do see a lot of people on the dance floor releasing and processing. And the recovery from that is lyrical, the lyrical rhythms and the improv, the ways that people move their bodies to repair and recover after some chaos of integration work, if you will. And last but not least is stillness. And the rhythms that the DJs use follow these waves and invite everyone on the dance floor to allow their bodies to naturally move in whatever comes up with no judgment, but just reflection as well built into these experiences within the collective. And so while I don't practice five rhythms in the corporate world, it is very much integrated into my coaching practice, music, dance and movement, the embodiments and somatics, as it tends to unleash and unlock a lot of potential for all leaders, not just women, but definitely very much core to women's leadership is an assertiveness, is that integration of body, mind, and heart.
Absolutely. And let us know, listeners, I'm sure I can twist Jen's arm to get on another podcast where we talk about music and conscious movement. So if you do want to hear a podcast all about that, make sure just to reach out, let us know. We'd be happy to put that together. So let's jump into scenario two now. So we talked a little bit about this, about the being seen, valued, heard, and respected. So let's explore a scenario where two team members are at conflict and it's affecting the team's productivity. How would you coach the team leader to address the situation and promote a constructive conflict resolution?
Yeah, the word conflict is what comes up there. It's a couple times you've said it. And maybe I invite that term creative abrasion that I offered earlier. And it's inherent. It is something that if we are in tune with our creative processes and coming together and co-creating with others within the teams and systems we work within, we are going to have this. So welcoming it in is first and foremost number one, really being curious about what I need from you to shine, what you need from me to shine, and how we're going to co-create together becomes, we've using the word conscious again, but consciously designing our relationships up front. So a lot of times that doesn't happen. And of course, we know that we don't put in the effort to, we leave our collaboration to chance. We don't have whole designing the relationship and keystone conversations, and then conflict ensues. And for me as a coach, I take to emotional reading quite a little bit. What is the core emotion that's underpinning the conflict, the less desirable experience that people are having? Is it fear? Is it anger? Is it sadness? Is it disgust? What's the core emotion that's there? And oftentimes what I am learning as a pattern is that fear underpins the protective mechanisms that we show up in that get in our way of being in relationships with others. And so my safety, my amygdala in my in our brain, we all have these amygdalas that have been conditioned there. We call them our reptilian brain or what have you, but our fight, flight, freeze, fawn responses, if you will, that when our ego states are in threat, we move away from others versus towards others. And so in any team, you ultimately want the system and relationship of everyone leaning towards one another, but you get these times, of course. And so naming it to tame it has become a big practice. One tool that we've used for many years within the organization I serve within, but also I've used in different contexts as well, is SCARF. And listeners, if you've ever heard of S, SCARF, SCARF, is a wonderful tool to look at what is the trigger that is underpinning my reactive tendency in conflict. What's the other person's trigger that's bringing up their reactive tendency that I'm reacting to? And we're bouncing off of one another, and our energy is just spinning in this creative abrasion field where we're paralyzed and we're not working towards our performance or outcomes, where we're not performing because we're stuck, right? And five questions associated with the SCARF model, which comes from the Neuro Leadership Institute, are around our status, our SCARF, so status, certainty, autonomy, relatedness, and fairness. And again, our neurodiversity has us experiencing these triggers very uniquely to our own patterns. And maybe I'll invite you to consider, Christina, what your sense of yourself is. But with status, we all have a different continuum, if you will, on our sense to achieve, to have an expressed value and worth. There's some individuals in this world that have extremely high need for status, and that's very important to them. And if there's a step on that, it can produce quite a large reaction, whereas others don't have the same intensity, if you will, of that domain. Certainty is another one. It's around needing to know. We often hear people, I need clarity. I need to know. I need to know. Feel safe within this relational field of what's role clarity. I need to understand. That's a mechanism of how we can thrive or not go to survival in this reality that everything is quite uncertain. And truly, who knows? What do we know? And what don't we know? And what's a minimal viable certainty that any two people need? Because your threshold for risk and safety around certainty in mind would be very different. So we need to talk about that. Autonomy is the third A, and that's a power dynamic. Are you going to give me choice in dynamic? Meaning you get the apple or the orange, or you're only going to offer me the orange? You're going to give me a sense of power? How much power or autonomy or agency does each individual need in their own lives is very unique to that person, right? And the last two, relatedness, is a rejection mechanism. It's an in-group, out-group sense that we have. And again, different people have different triggers and levels of threshold around that. But we tend to learn that on the playground growing up. And these mechanisms around our connection and relatedness to others can be quite high or low depending on who we are. And the last but not least is fairness. Yeah. And people, again, think of activists. Think of people who really are triggered into action by something that they sense is unfair and unjust in this world. And then think of people that aren't as triggered by a need for fairness between us or around us. You often hear those people say life is not fair, and there's a level of acceptance around it. But needless to say, if you hold these five elements and as a coach ask questions about them, the team members very quickly get to learn what each other's triggers are. And then naming it to tame it invites us into constructing around, there's that. I have a little bit of a need for autonomy and relatedness. Okay, so if I can ask for that then from those that I'm working with, now I'm taking accountability for myself to create my own reality by asking for what I need. But ultimately, asking for what we need is a relational capacity that can be very hard for people. And if we don't practice that muscle and work it out, we leave our relationships to chance. And we expect everyone to be our mind readers and understand. And then conflict happens usually because we can't read each other's minds very easily anyway.
I don't know about you listeners, but thought of personal relationships. And as you're going through them, I'm like, that's that person. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's that person. Oh, and that's me. I'm an A. And I will freely admit that would be definitely, I love control. So A would be important. But I'm laughing, but I think listeners take a moment and even re-listen to what Jen just said and understand where you fit and then what potentially could be a trigger. Because once you figure it out, it's that the cognitive behavioral therapy approach. What's the trigger? Now I can be like, oh no, I was triggered. And now here's the steps to bring me back in instead of wanting to go out and put the shields and the ego up.
You named it. It is. We're cognitive and behavioral is our integration here. And so it gives us a moment to choose a different response versus reacting. And in the moment, reactive energy, if I put mine out into this world and that's what I show up with, that's what I'm giving others to respond to? And do I choose for them to receive my reactive energy? Ultimately, who wants to receive anyone's reactive energy? It's not usually an enjoyable experience, right? And so choosing how we behave is the only thing we can control. And bottom line, Christina, we have all of these triggers, but we just process through them differently and we access them differently. And you named your go-to. Most people know there's a few that are more prominent for them and less, but then we're as unique as fingerprints. So in a team, no two people process the same, whether it's their head, heart, and gut, or whether it's their scarf triggers. Again, we're back to that lens of neurodiversity. Let's get curious then on how we embrace the diversity.
Oh my God, my TikTok is all about neurodiversity. But no, I think this is great, because again, I hope that as you're listening, you know, our HBA members, this is all about growing and be open to this, because I know that in the last couple of years, I've really been working a lot more on it. And I can say that I can now come to the table with a lot more than I used to be able to. So I think it's, we always have to be growing. So,
and I want to close on the always have to be growing. I think there's one really powerful question that shows up that we as leaders, as humans, as teams, we often don't capture the frequency of the question of how are you? Almost every day I ask many people and they ask me how we are being. Within leaders and teams, we might go a little bit deeper with coaching, and we might put some conditions that you're not allowed to say good, fine, or bad. We invite you to remove those one word answers that then block off the exploration of curiosity, so that people can learn to read you and understand where you're at and have a depth of vulnerability to be in connection with you. But if we cut off that question, how are you, we often find leaders will go right to what they're doing. Oh, I'm good. I'm busy. I'm doing this and this. Their task orientation, that they're being identified by what they achieve and what they do in life. And the being is the other 50% of the equation. So the richness that comes with connections and relationships is to really get curious. How are you in your A right now? Your need for autonomy. Like, how are you in it? Let's go there. And so deepening the conversations, how can I give you more autonomy in our relationship, Christina? How are you reading that? And having peer coaching conversations that open up the field, the relational field, to listen, be curious, and take those action learning loops is what underpins, I think, fear that shows up in conflict an awful lot in our world.
Well, and I don't know if anyone watches Ted Lasso. I love the be curious. Love it.
Always be curious. ABC. Always be curious. And so what is the opposite of curious? If we're saying always be curious, then what is the opposite of that that we maybe don't want to be? And so if I ask you, Christina, our listeners, what's the opposite of curious from your perspectives? What's the first word that comes to mind?
I'm trying to think of a word. I guess even going back to that episode, judgment, right? So you're just assuming things and putting your own thoughts of judging, right?
I think that's a wonderful comparator. And so as coaches, we work to show up without judgment at all times and show up in curiosity at all times and build those capacities in the leaders and teams we work with. Ultimately, if we play the judge, then it means that we know and we have the answers, and that's more of someone who would be in a mentoring role, or somebody who would be more a teaching role, or a different type of relationship. But when we show up in leaders and teams and in coaching contexts, ABC, always be curious. It's a good mantra.
And that also helps with that sort of, what we're not calling it conflict. What are we calling it again?
Creative abrasion.
Creative abrasion. So that kind of works with that, guys. And now we have one last one. I'm big on accountability goal setting. And of course, I'm sure we're all doing our KPIs every year of what we're doing. So in light of that, let's imagine a situation where the person that you're coaching is struggling to achieve their goals, maintain accountability. So how do you coach them to set actionable goals so that they'll actually stay on track and they can bring in that level of accountability?
The first question that comes to my mind is, whose goals are these? Are they created by the person I'm with, or are they given to the person that I'm working with? And the creation coming from within is very important to me because I think it ties to accountability very much. That if a person is creating their own goals tied to their values, their beliefs, their desires, and what they want to achieve and what outcomes they want in life, then the accountability becomes quite easy. If it's value aligned and it's purposeful and meaningful to that individual, I often ask, how can I be an accountability partner? And one strategy that often comes up is I hold an open space and just invite people to send me thumbs up when they've achieved what they've done. And I don't go back, but just knowing that someone out there in this world is curious, did you do what you said you were going to do? And send me a thumbs up once you've done it. And then all of a sudden, I just get through it the week, all these thumbs up messages from different
Love it.
clients or teams and such. And that they don't need to take time to go back and forth at that time, but the next time we're together, it's really about being curious about what they learned then from that action, and equally what they learned from the things that they chose not to take action on. The learning that comes out in the development through our attempts to take action in certain directions, and also our decisions not to put full energy into certain actions and goals. Ultimately, what comes out is very rich learning of what fulfills me towards living and creating the life I want to experience. I've got one life in this body, so how does it want to be, right? And so when you really boil it down to are your goals value aligned, then it becomes easy to take what we call a whole body yes or whole body no and tune in head, heart, and gut. Are you aligned? What you think, what you feel, and what you sense. Your action center in your body, your motive center in your heart, your cognitive center in your head. And oftentimes they're not aligned. The head's saying one thing, the heart's saying something else, and the body wants to go in that direction. I see you saying, yeah. And so really checking into the whole body yes and the whole body no becomes an accountability piece that each person owns themselves. And I hold space. And a lot of times, accountability, people decide that they're not going to step in that direction. And then, for what does it mean? Let's learn through that. And so, always be learning, always be curious.
Oh, I
And I
love
think
that.
that's what underpins a lot of our adult development. The judgment gets in the way.
By taking out the judgment, because that's, I think that's what we're
Yes.
all afraid of. And I think that's where, guys, we want to create those safe spaces, because like you said, we're all unique, we're all different. But if we're curious instead of judgmental, we're also going to figure out a way to work better together, work better individually. So I think it's just, to me, it's exciting what you could accomplish when you bring in a coach to help you with these things.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. And so for me, coaching, I've received an awful lot over my own life, and receive coaching to coach has been my journey. And I love that you brought in your own self-awareness of your neurodiversity and holding curiosity for each one of us that process uniquely, I think really helps organizations to thrive, embracing the wholeness, the human experience, and the diversity that is humanity.
Absolutely. And before we go, I'm going to open up the floor just for any sort of last thoughts for you. But I also, listeners, like I said, go to the show notes. There's some links there even to connect with Jen one-on-one. And I encourage that because I know myself, I've done a lot of growth in the last 2 to 3 years. And this is why I know you have to be working with someone. And I think it's so valuable to do that. So before we go, what are your last thoughts for our listeners today?
Yeah, my longing for all the listeners is to be well, to lead well. I would say our well-being is at the core of our human experience, and what you put out in the world for others to experience and receive from you is ultimately our choice. And the conscious nature of our leadership invites us to be ever more mindful of how we respond in life and how we co-create through the relationships to achieve great things. And
Oh, I
so
love that.
keep
Be
on.
well, lead well.
Thank Thank you very much, Christina, for inviting me to come on and chat with you. I've enjoyed our conversation. And listeners, as Christina said, I welcome you to reach out if anything piqued your curiosity today. I would happily receive your inquiries and curiosities.
Ah, that is so great, Jen. And thank you so much. Thank you so much, HBA members, for tuning in and listening to our podcast. It has been my absolute pleasure to host this podcast and share these moments with you every month. I wanted to let you know that this will be my last episode as your host, and I just wanted to thank you again for all of your support that you've given me over the last 4 seasons. And before I go, I just want to make sure everyone remembers to never stop pushing those boundaries.